Science Faction is for adults only. It's a dick podcast that occasionally mentions science. Any real learning that occurs over the next 40 minutes is both unintentional and discouraged.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 292. Science Faction, the origins of 2019.
That's right, we're cramming a third week of best ofs in you. This episode's just going to be the best of the last 2 weeks of
Don't
Science
tune out.
Faction this year.
Don't tune out yet, that is not what's happening. We're back to our regularly scheduled episodes. We're going to do origins of and science articles and the whole nine yards. No, this is the origins of 2019, or more accurately, the concept of a year and the calendar that we have that gave us 2019. Now, I know what a lot of you are thinking right now when I say the origins of 2019.
Is that their minds are blown. How do we proceed?
How can we start 2019?
I've never thought of this year as being an arbitrary thing. I thought this was law.
Well, that's what a lot of people think is like, isn't the calendar essentially governed by a scientific reality, an overarching reality, which would be the Earth's orbit around the sun? The answer is yes and no. So it kind of is and it kind of is not. So it's tied to that, to how long it takes us to get around the sun. But we also have to account for certain discrepancies. So let's start right off the bat with the easy ones. We already know that every 4 years we have a leap year, right? Which means that our year isn't exactly 365 days. How long do you guys think a year is?
I think a lot is made of the length of the year, but I really think the girth of the year is the more accurate.
Yeah. Yeah.
In which case, I would say 365 and a fourth.
I've heard it's not either of those. It's how you use it.
I was going to say 5 inches, right? 5 inches?
Listen, that's completely natural. That's a completely natural,
adequate size.
I heard it's more like how you prepare for the year and how much time you spend, you know, like taking care of the year's needs before it comes to yours.
Yeah. Do you go down on your calendar regularly?
Or wait, what is the girth of the orbit around the sun? What, like several? Million miles.
I think that's the new way I'm going to start describing diameter. What's the girth? But is this pi r squared? Now, how long do you guys think, Bill, how long do you think a year is?
You said leap year every 4 years. Yep. So 365.25 plus whatever the leap seconds are, which I know are a thing.
Right. No, you're right. You're getting right into it. So an actual year currently is 365.2422 days. So pretty close to 365 and a quarter.
So we've been overpaying?
We have. It's just like taxes. You overpay, you get the return.
Less than 0.25, you said 0.22 something?
Yes, 2422. So very close to 2.5, right? So every 4 years, we add an extra day. We call that a leap year, February 29th, and we get an extra day out of the year, right? However, what most people don't realize is you have to account for the fact that, it's not 365.25 days. It's 2422.
So you subtract... Why did we go to seconds instead of like weeks or something?
Well, the way it works is there is a leap year every year whose number is perfectly divisible by 4, except for years which are both divisible by 100 and not divisible by 400. So the second part of the rule affects century years. So example, the years 1600 and 2000 were both leap years. We had leap years on those years. However, the century years 1700, 1800, and 1900 are not. So those years, even though 4 years came around, we skipped the leap year to make up for the 2422. Right. So it's way more complicated.
Yeah.
You ask somebody how long is a year, they say 365 days, and then you go, really? And they go, oh, I guess, fuck, okay, let me think about a leap year. All right, 365 and a quarter. Really?
Nope.
All right, fuck, how do I do this? Think about what that means, though. If you arbitrarily add and skip a leap year, it means that where we are on January 1st isn't even a full rotation around, because you'd have to go 365.2422 years, and every time we continue to make that 365 years and then jump to a leap day at the end, it means we're actually technically in a different part of the orbital cycle of the Earth every time we're on the same date. So January 1st this year, we're in a different part of the orbital cycle of the Earth than we were January 1st of last year.
But only by 1/365th of a distance of the orbit, also changes.
Yes,
right?
Then you take into account orbital dynamics. And again, it is not a full circle around the sun, because our orbit changes and it's oddly elliptical and there's weird things going on and all this stuff. And again, remember, we don't actually orbit the sun. We orbit a center, gravitational center between ourselves and the sun. Mm-hmm. And the sun is kind of in some ways orbiting us. Because of all of that, you add all of that complications in. And in fact, A year is not a full spin around the sun for the Earth.
Do you think this shaky math around leap year, this that it's not common knowledge, you think that's probably one of the major reasons why there's no evidence of time travel? People keep missing, like, they keep teleporting into space.
They go to the wrong time. And, of course, teleporters are geographically specific.
Yeah, they
don't
they
act like my fake technology. Don't.
No, you bring up a good point.
They set their Doctor Who box,
yeah, the TARDIS
box, into, like, a certain position, but they forgot about this dynamics, and now they're in space.
That is something interesting.
Outside,
yeah,
the atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah, like if
and
you
they
got,
instantly die.
Yeah, that's like a time travel
so
portal.
Doctors, they just have been killed off. Every
if you
time.
Had a wormhole, it would be arbitrary to some kind of like set point in space time. So theoretically, you're right. You wouldn't come back to that same wormhole time if you left through that time. The Earth would have moved beyond that point in space, and you wouldn't be coming back.
So many wasted monkeys, yeah, and PhDs.
Yes. Yeah.
I think a combination thereof.
First of all, he wasn't a PhD. He was an alien shapeshifter that went around time traveling and solving the world. Never mind. I don't want to explain Doctor Who to you. So that is really interesting. And by the way, something else to consider is a year now, when we talk about that 365.2422 days, is not the same amount of time as a year used to be. So if you were to go back and transport yourself through
you
a time machine.
You used to be able to get 3 years for a nickel.
And a Hershey bar. If you were to take Damien's time travel machine and you were able to figure out all the geography of it and everything and you could go back to the right exact spot and you went back to the time of the dinosaurs, you would notice that the day was actually closer to 23 hours. The problem is the Earth's rotation is slowing down. So our planet, the speed at which it spins, is being dragged down by the moon, the gravitational force of the moon, which slows down the speed at which it rotates. So days are getting longer. Which means if you were to go back 500 years, it would be, again, slightly, ever so slightly, 5,000 years, more so, 5 million years, more so. And if you go all the way back to the dinosaur era, you know, if you go back 80 million years, it was enough that you would notice it. You would notice a 23-hour day, maybe even 22-hour day. So
I don't have enough to get all this done. My time for hunting and gathering.
But as far as we know, the speed that it's rotating is slowing down, the speed that it's actually moving in that circular orbit around the sun seems to be pretty fixed. Meaning that it would take more days, because days were shorter, to go around the sun in dinosaur times than it did now. So it was more like 370 some odd days would be a year back then.
Right, but only because days are shorter, not because it actually
because the arbitrariness
time.
Of the day.
So if we as a species could theoretically create a second artificial moon, similar to the one we have now.
Right.
We could actually get more hours into the day, is what
you're
saying.
Yes, slow us down even more so. Or bring the moon closer. That would help, too, because the gravitational effect would be better.
No, then the tides would think they're in charge.
We could shoot more of our mass onto the moon that would start to equilibrate.
Moon landfills are the solution to our short day problem.
Or a moon colony, with all of the heaviest people on the moon.
Set up trailer parks on the moon.
And then we have to look at the calendar itself. Where do we get it? So we call it the Gregorian calendar, named after Pope Gregory XIII, who introduced it in October of 1582. The calendar was developed as a correction to the Julian calendar, shortening the average year by 0.0075 days to stop the drift of the calendar with respect to the equinoxes. Basically, they had had this same problem. They could not calibrate the calendar as it existed to this astronomical unit of a year, and it would drift away from the equinoxes, which are not arbitrary. Those happen at the same time. So to deal with the 10-day difference between the calendar and reality that this drift had already reached, the date was advanced. So they actually skipped a bunch of days in this calendar.
Wow.
Nobody can read at this time. Come on. Who's this? Nobody even... Yeah. This isn't news to people.
The Pope is probably having sex and doing all a bunch of weird non-Pope stuff at this time.
Right, but
doing it the boys. Is it the Pope of stuff?
Think about this, though. People went to sleep on the 4th of October in 1582, and they woke up on the 15th of October, 1582. That's really interesting, and it kind of shows you how arbitrary the whole idea of a calendar actually is when you just go, hey, by the way, fuck these 10 days.
Like people would have really needed a calendar for farming
yes.
and stuff, right? They needed to know
But they didn't. You're thinking of it the wrong way, because they needed that calendar eventually to do that type of farming stuff. At that point in the 16th century, you had people gauging when you reap, when you sow, based on moon cycles, things that there were solidly set to the astronomical calendar as opposed to the actual calendar.
I see.
Do you think that this act, the fact that they just eliminated those days altogether, is the reason why astrology is inaccurate today?
That's probably why, because they didn't think of the right...
It was a science.
Yeah,
before.
They have to recalibrate.
Oh, I'm actually a Gemini now. Okay, yeah, that's why none of my horoscopes have come true or been oddly specific to me.
I think I remember someone readjusting and then like changed Virgo to be like 4 more days of the month or something like that.
Right, and nutty chicks all over the world flipped out. So then over the next 3 centuries, the Protestant and Eastern Orthodox countries also moved to what they call the improved calendar, with Greece being the last European country to adopt the calendar. But here's what's interesting. So between that time, between the late 1500s and when the entire European continent, which Greece was the last one, came to adopt this new improved calendar, between that time, the dates were different depending on what part of the continent you were in. If you were in Western Europe, you were following this improved calendar. If you were in Eastern Europe, you weren't, which means if you could send a letter and it could arrive on a date before you sent it, technically.
There had to have been some grifters exploiting loopholes.
Right, yeah. Like, I feel like there's a lot of tax schemes you could do. Or like...
Totally.
I don't know. Like, could you figure out who won the sporting event?
Yeah. I'll charge you more based on how fast I get your letter there.
Yeah.
If I get it there, like, before it was sent, then I get infinite cash, right?
So let me ask you this. When do you guys think the last country, Greece, finally synced up with the improved calendar and everything was together? When do you think, what year was it that finally they had united the calendars and there was no longer 2 different dates depending on what part of the continent you were in?
Knowing what I know of Greece, I would say it was a requirement for them joining the EU. So 2000-ish.
All right, and Bill.
I was going to give a similar explanation. Like, in my stereotype of Greece, they're very lazy, and they kind of maybe they were holding out for more Fridays or something like that. And so, like, I'm going to say 1985.
Not quite that bad. 1923. But think about that. That means literally up through World War I, you had people yelling at each other. No, I meant the other October 2nd.
We would have been great in the war if we could just develop a calendar.
Was that Italian? Yeah, I don't know what that is.
I watched Captain Corelli's Mandolin. There's a lot of accents in that.
And speaking of a mandolin, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. And with me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great. And you should be grateful my accent didn't turn out fucking Russian for
once. Yeah, that's one of the first times you didn't go all the way Russian.
Duh.
And our scientist for the evening, Bill. Bill, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Didn't bring it up on this podcast last year, but I gave up alcohol last year.
Did you really?
I did.
Why?
Various reasons. The obvious one would be health.
Okay. You wanted to ruin your health by giving up alcohol.
I wanted to improve my health and gain back,
you know, a blood thinner. It's like aspirin.
An extra morning of not being hungover every week. And then I also wanted to avoid wanting to have a drink before I become social or that kind of thing, you know?
All
to
right.
sort of be able to get myself into a fun mindset without having alcohol.
Okay.
Anyways, done with that.
Done. Yeah, fuck that.
You did it.
No wonder you look so hungover.
In the new year, I've actually given up alcohol as well. I found it was getting in the way of my opioid addiction.
Yeah. Yeah. Because then you risk, you know, passing out and dying.
Yeah.
I found that I wasn't able to do the amount of heroin that I really wanted to do. I was too drunk. I couldn't operate. Yeah. My dealer was like, I can't deal when you...
You know how hard it is to get the vein?
Hand-eye coordination. Yeah. You can't, like, wrap things and...
My dealer wouldn't answer my calls anymore. I just was just too sloppy around him.
Yeah. I actually did notice that, like, the first couple weeks when I stopped having alcohol, when I would go out, I would crave like ice cream or something sweet.
Interesting.
Like, as something else to do, maybe.
Maybe you didn't get those sweet alcohol sugar rush. Yeah.
I guess.
And what you guys should give up in 2019 is not promoting our podcast to your friends. For those of you guys who did give that up in 2018, thank you so much. Recently, just a huge surge in numbers. We've been posting it on our Facebook page. Really, really cool. Have no idea how that happened except for the fact that we have not been doing advertising, so it's coming from you guys. So thank you so much for telling your friends. Thank you so much for spreading the word. There's been a few people who just kind of put episodes they liked up on their Facebook page, and all of a sudden those episodes took off and blew away the numbers of our most listened to episodes. So thank you guys. It is really this very vocal minority of our listeners who promotes us and then gives us this huge bump in numbers. It really, really helps. Thank you so much to every one of you guys who do that. We really, really appreciate it. And to all you new listeners who just came in because of that, welcome to Science Faction. Welcome to 2019. We hope you like the show. Let's get started with science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
All right, article number one, a second repeating fast radio burst detected.
Now, we talked about this before, but the first one just said send nudes, right?
That was exactly right, yes.
Message from space, yeah. Came in, send nudes.
No, it was just a repeated dick pic over and over again.
I'm horny, you up? So what's the second cat call have to say?
It's just eggplant emoji over and over again.
That would be way too easy to confuse for send nukes. Like, are we supposed to, like, you know, hook up with this alien culture or destroy them completely?
I don't know. The general at ForceCom has one very strong opinion. I give them all the nukes they want.
That's why, little known fact, Vladimir Putin gets the most dick pics. That's
that was part of his strategy.
So we've talked about fast radio bursts before. Very interesting. This phenomenon, just a fast radio burst in and of itself, which is a short burst of radio waves coming from far outside the Milky Way galaxy. We don't know what these are. We don't know where they come from. We just know that they emanate from an incredibly powerful astronomical event. We don't know what it is. They're billions and billions of light years away, and they're so extremely energetic at their source. The strength of the signal reaching the Earth has been described as 1,000 times less than that from a mobile phone from the moon. So imagine a cell phone from the moon. 1,000 times less of that is what we get when we see these fast radio bursts now. However, it comes from such great distances, and the sources have to be so energetic that whatever is causing them is generating as much energy in 1 millisecond burst as the sun does in 80 years. 80 years of the sun is 1 millisecond burst of one of these fast radio bursts. Very neat. We didn't discover them until 2007. They were actually looking at data that had been collected in 2001 when they found them. But we didn't discover them until 2007. And since then, we have discovered 60 fast radio bursts. We're looking at these with telescopes, basically pointing out into space. The first repeating fast radio burst we covered in 2015 when it was first discovered. That's really interesting because it's that really quick millisecond burst over and over and over and over again in a constant stream. That's really interesting. It tells us we certainly don't know what this is, because before people were saying, maybe it's two black holes colliding together. That would be really energetic. Maybe it's a neutron star hitting a black hole. All of those only work if it's one burst.
What about like a pulsar, something that is like, you know, every time that it revolves, it would be sending a burst. So it would be repeating.
So pulsars or neutron stars are kind of some ideas at what this might be. A pulsar, again, is putting out a tremendous amount of energy on a regular basis. However, we know what a pulsar looks like, right? We've seen them before, and those aren't registered by us as fast radio bursts.
Do you think perhaps scientists are just generalizing all pulsars? I mean,
not all pulsars.
Isn't that like saying like all pulsars would know each other?
Right.
Different spectrum of the pulsar. It's like the, I don't know, the blue pulsar versus the red pulsar.
A southern pulsar, you might say.
So of those 60 fast radio bursts observed to date, repeated bursts from a single source have only been found once, that one time in 2015. This is only the second time. What's interesting is it comes from a new telescope we call the Chime telescope. And when we first put it up, people were saying, let's look for fast radio bursts. However, the frequency at which this observes was actually thought to be outside of the frequency of fast radio bursts.
Right, it's like a much lower frequency than what we've seen before.
Right, and so not only are we seeing a fast radio burst, only the second one we've ever noted in the history of humankind, but it happens to be one in a completely different frequency because this particular telescope looks at a completely different frequency than the one that picked up the 2015 incident.
The Canadians designed this telescope specifically to look for these radio bursts, right?
This was one of many missions that it had.
So they must have had some idea that there would be repeated bursts in this frequency range, or why would they design it to be in a range?
Well, not just repeated, by the way, because, again, this also observed non-repeated bursts as well. Right. So they were looking for fast radio bursts. But no, not necessarily, because one of the arguments was, hey, we should design this telescope differently because we want to also use it for fast radio bursts. And some of the people were like, well, maybe it'll work anyway. And they're like, no, never. We've only detected in this totally other spectrum. They weren't putting this up just to look for fast radio bursts. That was one thing that it could possibly do, but they didn't even know if that was possible until
they did. But it turns out that's like the most noteworthy discovery
that we've found so far. Again, maybe somebody's going to put it up with a different frequency and find out.
This telescope is relatively new, right?
Yes, the Chime.
Like a year ago, something like that?
Yeah, basically. And you got to remember, it takes a while to get that data in and start processing it. So again, when we talked about the discovery in 2007, it was from signals that were recorded in 2001. So you could start this thing up and start getting a whole bunch of data, and we wouldn't know about it for months later.
Hopefully we've gotten that window down from 10 years to be able to interpret that data.
Yeah.
I think we have because, I mean, this telescope has only been up for a year, right? And we now have heard about it.
It's... Again, remember, before they were looking back in the data and discovering something that nobody had ever seen before. That's a very different thing. It's much harder to look for something you've never seen before. Now we know what we're looking for.
Well, so we also have, like, exponentially greater signal processing capabilities.
Much better processing power. You have better processing power in your pocket right now than a lot of the computer research facilities did in 2001.
Are you talking about my dick robot, my dick AI?
No, it's talking about your bionic ball.
it's a lot like Knight Rider talks to me. Damien, it's very dark in here. I can't help you observe the environment unless you help me. I have scanners that can help you in day-to-day life. I get arrested every time I have you out.
You're the worst $6 million man.
I could shoot my freeze ray. Please, help me.
Can see through walls but can't see through your underpants. Yes.
Please stop sassing the cop testicle, robot testicle.
Very interesting. I think that within our lifetime, we will figure out what these are. I honestly do, given the amount of information that we're collecting, the fact that we only knew of one 10 years ago, we now have 60, including two repeating ones. We have way, way more data on it. I think eventually we'll figure out what it was. It might be something like a weird pulsar. It might be two black holes doing something to each other. It might be these weird things we've never observed before. Maybe it's an astronomical phenomenon that we've never seen, that we've never even thought
of. Or could be aliens, right? I mean, you know.
Alex Jones here. Sorry I had to kick in the door. Somebody said the word aliens, and I came running. I'm sorry. I'm just going to sit in the back here, all right? If you guys talk about aliens, I got something to throw in. I'm going to be in the room again.
If you say either the word aliens or chili, Alex Jones comes knocking down your door.
Somebody say chili? Sorry, I ran into the mic again. Alex Jones, I'm a man's man who makes man's chili. The chick is Hormel. My dog knows a secret, and I killed him.
That was the Bush's baked beans dog, actually.
Different dog.
Okay.
I don't know if Alex Jones was around in the 90s, but there was a movie called Contact with Matthew McConaughey.
Yes, there was.
And I think it was
written by Carl Sagan.
They were using the same telescope as was used for the first repeating radio burst.
The Australian one?
No, Puerto Rican.
Oh, for the repeating one.
Yeah, Jodie Foster discovers these repeating radio waves and like... Turns out they're sending prime numbers to us or something.
So they sent instructions on how to make the basically the Stargate.
Right. So maybe like the next one will be the number 3.
There are people who think that this is some kind of sign from aliens. Like one of the ideas that they're having is this is actually some kind of alien propulsion device. You know, what you're seeing is the evidence of a engine going poof, 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 and you know, shooting somebody as they're trying to speed up to near the speed of light.
I believe the noise sound effect I made was poof, 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 poof. We're pumping my big biceps
That's
every
right,
time. I see you've bought into the fact that Contact was a quote-unquote movie put out by Hollywood. Listen, me and Al, when InfoWars, before we were taken off the air for having the truth, we actually had footage of that 8 hours of static from the end of the movie proving that Jodie Foster was real.
And listen, who knows what alien civilizations are capable of if they exist? But I would find it hard to think that any kind of civilization could create a power source that would release 80 times the sun's energy within a millisecond. Now, if you talk to somebody 500 years ago, they'd find it unconceivable that you could release a hydrogen bomb amount of energy at once. So who knows? Maybe that is possible. Maybe that could be them. I think most likely this is some kind of astronomical phenomenon, but that's still super interesting. It is telling us about part of our universe that we don't currently understand, right, or maybe even completely know about, only it's showing us that there's this phenomenon out there that we have yet to explain. Maybe our kids will grow up with this in their sixth grade textbooks and it'll be well understood by then. But up until now, it is a mystery, a legitimate scientific mystery. And bringing up Alex Jones, it's one of the reasons that I think science is so much more interesting than conspiracy theories. There are real mysteries. This is one of them. It's a fact. You don't have to imagine a Bilderberg group is doing something in the middle of the woods. This is something that's real, and it's interesting, and we got to get to the bottom of it.
You don't have to imagine these things, but, you know, maybe... Life's just a bit more fun with some mystery involved, with a little snake oil.
And maybe this will be the answer to the Fermi paradox, which we've talked about before. You know, why is it that we look into the sky and we don't see a bunch of radio waves from other alien civilizations? We should have so many alien civilizations based on life and all this kind of stuff. Why isn't it there? Maybe this is the answer. I happen to think it isn't. But I do think it's even more interesting than that. It is a legitimate scientific mystery of a phenomenon of this universe that we don't understand.
All right, Alex Jones, you're hurting my lap. Get out of here.
All right, I'm out here. Aliens are real. InfoWars, blah, blah, blah. Virility serum, frog's gay.
All right, on to article number 2, how brain signaling may prevent or cause osteoporosis in women.
Brain signaling? Are you hypnosis? Are you saying you can hypnotize women into being osteoporotic?
That would be a really bad stage show. Like, it's just like, all right, look at this watch. Now break your femur.
Yeah.
Perosa. That's how they cut the woman in half, right? You just break all of your bones in your hip.
That's right. It just easily folds.
Yeah.
Ex-ballerinas.
Osteoporosis is a problem that's faced by a lot of older women. Basically, your bones get very weak, lose density. That's why women will sometimes supplement with both calcium and estrogen. Estrogen for women, which is the main sex hormone women have, their version of testosterone. Men have a little bit, but not that much. Estrogen in women helps build strong bones. When they get through the menopause state, they stop producing estrogen and their bones get weak, and we call that condition osteoporosis.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but osteoporosis is one of the main reasons why there are no women over 50 in MMA.
That is one reason that there's not a lot of over 50 in MMA women. To be fair, there's not a lot of over 50 MMA men either.
Randy Couture is making a comeback.
So this research was really interesting because it's one of those ones where it's not necessarily somebody knows something and they're going to go try and investigate it. That happened a little bit later. But it's one of those things where we find something that we did not expect. A researcher was looking at genetically engineering a very specific set of neurons in the hypothalamus of mice. And when they did that, again, they aren't looking for a specific thing or not necessarily this specific thing. But they noticed that these mice that were genetically engineered with a specific set of cells in their hypothalamus differentiated – these mice gained a little weight and also became a little bit less active. The researcher thought, maybe they're putting on fat. Maybe it's even putting on a little bit more muscle. However, when they looked at them, they didn't see that they were fatter or had more muscle. And so when they finally did the autopsy and looked at everything, they realized, holy shit, these mice have like super dense Wolverine bones.
They were big bone, literally.
Literally, these mice were big bone. They were the only ones who could say that.
Not just a little bit, like 8 times as much bone mass, right?
Literally 800% as much bone mass. It was so different that when they do the crush test, which is how they test bone density, thankfully it's after the mice is dead. They're not doing it well, like they don't just put his leg in there. But when they did the crush test, the test almost failed. Like the machine was not able to crush the bones easily enough. Eventually it worked, but it was so difficult that it was past the normal parameters of the machine.
So wait, they have a machine that's specifically for mice. You couldn't use rat bones in this thing. That's specifically we turned this thing up to 11 and it's not breaking.
I want to be
bones.
The guy who makes the mice bone crushing machine.
I don't. You can meet that guy alone.
Through further and further research, the same researcher zeroed in on a specific population of just a few hundred estrogen-sensitive brain cells located in the region of the hypothalamus called the arcuate nucleus, which appeared to be responsible for these dramatic increases in bone density. Again, a very small number of cells. This isn't a global difference. These are just a few cells. A few hundred neurons, like, that's almost nothing. That is very, very small.
And as the article mistakenly described it, a handful.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so a handful.
That could be a lot of neurons.
Brain cells, that's like your half your fucking brain.
Right.
Like, you gotta watch your wording describing brain cells.
I would actually like to picture the scene where they take the machine back to the guy who sold them the Mouse Bone Crusher 2000 or whatever. They walk into his office, it's very disconcerting. There's leather, there's loud German techno music playing. You see a guy. You deliver the news. I'm sorry, it failed to crush the bones. What do you mean it failed to crush the bones? He's wearing a cod piece. His crotch is hanging out. You've interrupted my bone crushing time.
He crushes the mouse bones with his bare hands and just hands it to you. That's the handful.
So what they think is that the estrogen normally kind of signals these cells in the brain to say like, hey, stop spending so much time on bone growth. Now, they don't get rid of the estrogen. You want the estrogen. That's part of what you need. What it instead does is take away the receptor on those cells for the estrogen. So this time, the estrogen, which is helping the bone growth, isn't also telling the brain to start deleting bone growth. And they think that is what is happening, and it's creating these superhumanly strong bones. And they follow-up research found that the mice could keep the strong bone density well into old age, well past the geriatric time, and even reverse bone density losses that were already happening. So if you don't genetically engineer the mice, you take normal mice, then you basically take their sensitivity of this away in those particular cells in the brain, you get 70% of the bone loss that is normally takes place during osteoporosis gets reversed. That means that it's not just a treatment to genetically engineer future groups. It could help groups now that are already suffering from the condition.
So basically, we're going to be living in a future where all old women are stout.
Yeah.
They look like Russian grandmothers.
Not just that, but all
dwarven ladies.
What if we could do that? You could theoretically, if you say an 800% increase in bone density, you could, for all intents and purposes, essentially eliminate bone breakages if you could have an 800% bone density
but
increase.
But only in women, right?
In women for now, right? So
like this is a pathway that they've only found that's related to estrogen.
It's a very good point. It does not work in male mice. You can do the same modification in male mice and it has absolutely zero effect. So it would work to start out with in females, but we might be able to extrapolate this data to figure out how to build these really strong bones and be able to help everybody. And right now, it's also, it should be noted that osteoporosis mainly affects older women. So that is the group that needs it the most.
Okay. Knowing what we know now, that breaking a hip for a senior citizen, somebody with osteoporosis is not only very likely, but it's a death sentence.
Yes.
In many cases.
Yeah.
Knowing that, how many women round about the time menopause happens, 40, 50, whatever, would say, take this drug, this gene treatment, that would just make their ass explode and everything. Like, hey, you don't have to worry about this problem 20 years from now, but guess what's going to happen?
Well, why do you think their ass is going to explode?
Well, I mean, are they taking this drug that's giving them tons of bone weight? Are they going to look like big bone mice?
But it's bone stuff. Like, that, your bone density is going to make you look fat. It'll make you weigh more, but you're not going to just suddenly look fat because you weigh more.
Did these mice look fat or not? Did the researcher said these mice
look
fat?
I think they looked slightly bigger, but basically it was just a heavy thing. They were heavier because their bones had more weight to them.
Oh, so they're
Wolverine.
Oh, well, then no problem. I'd fuck Wolverine.
Yeah. We've seen your blog.
Fan art.
Yeah, you know, the problem with that is you have to wear an adamantium condom. So. Oh,
listen, I was just worried that all my mature porn was about to become very distasteful.
Well, you no longer have to worry about breaking someone's hip during the act.
That's why I watch half my mature porn.
Right. It's actually Damien's version of when you, like, do that wishbone thing at Thanksgiving, only it's with an old lady's hip.
Oh, my God.
The left one is lucky.
That's awful. But also, this article made me realize that I really have no idea how hormones work. Like, apparently there's a different effect of estrogen on the bones if it's in the blood versus if it's in the brain.
Not just that, but when we say estrogen is a female sex hormone, males do have some estrogen in their body, and females do have some testosterone in their body. It seems that estrogen and testosterone have vastly different effects on the different gender. So what it does to us, now obviously female bodybuilders and stuff will take testosterone and it does help them with that. But sometimes the effects of estrogen or testosterone on the opposite sex have a completely different effect. So not only does it not necessarily do what you think it does, it doesn't always do that same thing depending on the, you know, basis of who it's being given to.
Why would natural selection favor estrogen causing osteoporosis later? Is it because like older ladies who could still break a dude's jaw? Like does that select
it
against?
So if you're talking about natural selection, you got to remember natural selection kind of stops working once you get past your reproductive years. So natural selection doesn't give a fuck what you do when you're old. Like it doesn't care if you die, it doesn't care whatever. You're not reproducing anymore. It's not affecting you.
Well, so despite the fact that women are at their sexiest after 60, they still can't reproduce. You know what?
You're still going for that wishbone.
Well, there could have been a small evolutionary effect. Like, you know, if your matriarchs live past 50, then they're likely to help raise
the
children,
kids.
Which would then...
This is called the grandmother effect in natural selection, and it's one of the theories as to why we do live past our prime in terms of being able to have kids, is maybe you're there as a social group, and because you're in that social group as an older person, you can help with the children, you can watch the campfire, you can do whatever, and while everybody
else... But you don't need fully functional bones for that, apparently.
No. You don't need fully functional bones.
That's my job, to fix those fully functional bones, wishbone style.
Well, you just have to understand that women spend a lot of resources, a lot of energy resources, food resources, caloric resources on menstruation, on egg production, on all of these type of things, right? So because of that, it is very, very costly. One of the ideas of menopause is, okay, you're getting to a point where you're not going to have kids anymore. And in fact, it's actually dangerous at this point. Having a child is very, very likely to kill you. Therefore, going through menopause and not wasting those energy resources is good for you. However, the byproduct of that is you've now fucked with the hormone system and you might break a hip a little bit later.
Aren't you born with all the eggs? You're born with a basket of eggs.
Yes, but your
you just have to sit on them.
Your production and maintenance of everything. Your production of...
Menstruating.
Stuff in the uterine lining.
Maintain a slightly higher body temperature.
Yep, it's a core body temperature, all that kind of stuff. So all of that is very costly to women.
And
so,
eating disorder in your teens.
Yeah. Yeah, it is weird that it's not for guys, though, because you get guys like the guy who played Scotty on Star Trek. I think he was still having kids well into his 90s.
Yeah, and looked great when he was pregnant. Aged very gracefully, but he's European, you know, him and Helen Mirren.
She's still hot, by the way.
I don't feel ashamed. Like, she's a Hollywood actress. I feel like I'd be doing a disservice to the arts by not boning Helen Mirren. And she's doing a disservice by me by not returning my dick pics.
Oh, man, I only broke the right hip. All right. Very, very interesting thing. I love things like this where somebody accidentally stumbles upon something that is probably a very, very big deal and that might really, really help people. It's not just an arbitrary thing. What is this weird noise up in the sky? Even though fast radio bursts are interesting, this actually might change the lives of older people within our timeline. So very, very interesting
stuff.
And
this is affecting – osteoporosis affects, what, like 100 million what people?
One of the interesting things I saw is that similar to cancer, they say that for a woman on a long enough timeline, it's inevitable. So they say it's essentially 100% on a long enough timeline for most women.
Especially since women are living longer, yes. Or people in general are living longer.
Yes, and women live longer than men. And so that's even extended. By the way, one of the interesting ones that did not end up making Science Faction's list was the woman with the record for the oldest woman living, or the oldest woman who's ever lived. I believe she's now passed, made it to 122. And a bunch of researchers just came out and they went, we looked at her paperwork. We think this bitch was lying. We actually think this woman assumed her mother's identity back in like the 1930s or something like
that.
She's
been collecting two social security checks this whole time.
And she's only like 90 years old or whatever, because there was also a huge gap. She was like 4 years older than the next closest one, which doesn't really happen.
Maybe she was counting leap years or something.
She was on the Greek calendar because she was born before.
The president she said she banged just don't sync up. Like, she wasn't in the right towns.
Yeah, she has a few instances.
She actually banged the Pope.
Back when that meant something.
Right.
She had a few instances where she mixed up her husband and her father, but, you know, old people do weird stuff like that because of fucking dementia. The studies of her muscle and her physiology and stuff seem to suggest she was in her 80s or 90s, not 122. So we'll end up seeing if that pans out later on.
She kept in marvelous shape for her age.
All right. Thank you so much, audience, for coming back for our first regular show of 2019, where you learned about the origins of 2019, how we've discovered only the second repeating fast radio burst ever detected, and why osteoporosis might be a thing of the past. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back this Thursday for Science Faction 293.
Hey, Mildred. I like my women like I like my peanut butter. Crunchy.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.